my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1, 2, 3 cents of a podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
Hey friends, Kevin Huntsberger here with episode 279 of my 1, 2, 3 cents, the podcast. And, you know, obviously, if you're listening to this in the moment, so to speak, you know that we are facing some difficult times as a country, but not just as a country, but as the world. The coronavirus, COVID-19, and you've seen the headlines, you've read the news. I'm not going to go into great detail here. Just remind everyone to be safe, be smart. If you are sick, don't go out and spread this or even get other people maybe the flu or whatever the case may be, that then their immune systems become compromised. So in Illinois here, for example, where this podcast is being recorded, we are now under a stay-at-home order per the governor. So I will be doing most of my work from the house, going out just for groceries and the necessities, but be safe out there. And, you know, I am going to make one more quick comment on the situation, and that is the criticism that WWE and to a lesser extent AEW have received for proceeding with shows and doing shows and the fact that WrestleMania is going on. And I am a huge supporter of WWE continuing on with WrestleMania. This week, a blog will redrop on the my123cents.com website, and I'll put it out on social media as well, about how WrestleMania helped me through a very dark period of my life as a tween, the very first WrestleMania, and the impact and how much I needed that show. And I think that people today need to be entertained and distracted for a bit. You know, I'm not saying be distracted and become ignorant to what is going on around you, but I do think that any sense of normalcy that we can get, and yeah, the arena will be empty and there won't be fans there, and I think this will also show us for sure, for certain, how important fans are to a broadcast, a wrestling broadcast, or baseball or basketball or hockey or whatever the case may be. However, I applaud Vince McMahon. I applaud the management in WWE, the entertainers, the superstars, the wrestlers, the people behind the scenes, the people who are going to make this happen as they record bits and pieces of WrestleMania and put it together and keep this tradition alive that helped me 35 years ago, again, through a very rough patch in my adolescence. So look for that coming up on Wednesday, and, you know, as they say, the show must go on. And the show this week, the podcast this week, is with Dalton Anthony, who is one half now of the Stride Pro Wrestling Tag Team Champions. It is The Interview, and we talk about going from a wrestling fan to a professional wrestler and the transition that he made and some of the sacrifices that he has made along the way as well. So Dalton is the co-host of Pro Wrestling Unscripted over at Podzilla 1985. So check out Podzilla 1985 again. Check out my buddy Chad Smart with Positive Cynicism, the PCPN. He's still turning out content. Greg Mahochko and Chad host Greg and Chad's Power Half Hour right here on Jittery Monkey. Travis Yates has a new podcast, the Up All Night podcast. So looking at the great movies from that era on USA, Up All Night. So the Skull Buster Wrestlecast hosted by Tom and Jason Skull. Those are just a few that I'm listening to. The OVP podcast, of course, Our Vantage Point. Those guys put out great content as well. So find your podcasters, support them, support your local businesses if you are able to. I mean, obviously, we are all going through a tough time, and I think this is going to have a detrimental impact on our economy as well. So whatever you can do to support local, I encourage you to do that in your communities and help those who need help. You know, now is a time for unity, and of course, we're not going to see that coming off the mainstream, but I feel like together we can get more accomplished and more done than if we are divided and fighting, especially fighting over petty, silly things like should WrestleMania happen or why is AEW debuting Matt Hardy on a night when there's not a crowd. You know, it's silly, nonsensical stuff like that that really I think people should take stock and appreciate the finer things in life. But I guess that's the intro for this week. But, you know, we are working over at Stride Pro Wrestling as well to keep folks entertained during all of this. So check out the Stride Pro Wrestling YouTube channel. I'm going to work on the My123Cents YouTube channel this week as well. And I'm going to up my TikTok game. So if you aren't following me on TikTok, check out the TikTok page. It's Kevin.Huntsperger. I believe that's what I've named it. So I've got some wrestling stuff on there. It's going to primarily be wrestling, but I'm doing some other fun things as well. So I guess that is it for the intro. Stick around. Dalton Anthony is the guest, and we'll talk next week.
It's time for school, but you're not going to be saved by this bell. Established in 2016, Stride Pro Wrestling trainers have put their years of experience to help train the next generation of professional wrestlers. Nearly a dozen students have graduated and are now making a name for themselves, not only here at Stride Pro Wrestling, but beyond. Our athletes aren't locked into any long-term contracts. So if you want to train, use your head and contact Stride Pro Wrestling today. It's training you'll flip for. So kick your future into high gear now.
Hey everyone, as promised, Dalton Anthony is the guest this week on The Interview, and he is now one half of the Stride Pro Wrestling Tag Team Champions. Dalton, welcome back to My 123 Cents.
Hey, how's it going? Happy to be back.
Going well, and I guess, you know, we can talk about it and joke about it a little bit, the quote-unquote war between Podzilla 1985, Pro Wrestling Unscripted, and My 123 Cents. It's all fun and witty banter, as they say in the biz, so no hard feelings, yeah. Even though you bust my balls just about every time I see you at Stride.
Well, see, so here's the thing. I'm usually the U at PZ85 and CCW for that matter, so it's kind of one of those things where it's like, oh, open season.
I understand.
But in total fairness, and there's a witness, you shut me down last show. I won't say what you said, but totally shut me down last show.
Yeah.
So I think we're at a ceasefire right now.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And you know, I've only done a couple of these quote-unquote interview-style episodes, and I wanted to learn a little bit more about you, not only as a fan, but as a professional wrestler, because you are one of those guys, and we've had some of the ladies at Stride as well, and I'm sure you guys have seen the same thing across the river in Cape Girardeau with Cape Championship Wrestling, but you go from that fandom to stepping in and going through the training. Now, I can remember when you and Asa and Shannon and Allie and I think Lindsay was here a couple of times where you guys came over to watch Stride Pro Wrestling as fans, purely as fans, and you guys all kind of got that start together as well with Cape Championship Wrestling, and that all blossomed. So talk to me a little bit about the fandom side of things. Where were you in your fandom, or where are you in your fandom? Because you are honestly just a few years, well, probably a handful of years older than my oldest kid. So obviously there's a generation in between us. I grew up in the 80s with Hulkamania and all that good stuff. And I'm guessing you were more of the Attitude Era?
Well, so I was born in 92. I'm 27 right now, okay, as of recording. So, like, I remember the Attitude Era. Like, whenever people tell me, like, my first memories of wrestling, like, I can remember a little bit of pre, like, X-Pac DX.
Mm-hmm.
Like, very minimal amounts. But if I was to say the generation I grew up with, you're looking more at, like, the Ruthless Aggression Era. Like, I remember the Attitude Era. Mm-hmm. And I watched a whole lot back then, but it's mainly that 2000, because I'm 8 years old, it's 2000.
Yeah.
So it's mainly I started really watching like late Attitude Era, and then into that Invasion Ruthless Aggression era, if to kind of timeline like when I was growing up with it.
So was WCW was obviously on its dying days when you were watching then?
Yeah, and I only knew of WCW and ECW through toys.
Okay.
Which, I mean, is kind of fitting because the first episode we ever did together was about action figures.
Yeah, yeah, and I was going to say, so what was it about, what attracted you about the wrestling? Did you see the toys first and then the product, or were you flipping the channels? Like, what was your introduction to pro wrestling?
My dad's side of the family, actually the biggest, I'm not even the biggest wrestling fan in my family. I have a 96-year-old grandma, Grandma Jack, who's still when she can, will watch wrestling.
Okay.
And I would spend weeks at her house at a time, mom and dad go on vacation, or my dad was a truck driver, so he would be gone for weeks. Mom would have a job. I would go to Grandma Jack's and she would just put wrestling on. She watched two things every day, and it was Jerry Springer and wrestling.
Nice.
And so I watched wrestling all the time, and I would watch, but she only watched WWF at the time.
Okay.
There was no WCW at her house. So I guess my grandma had brand loyalty, but so I've seen everything from 83 to 96, 97 at her house.
Okay.
But, whenever I start really getting into it myself, it's at the Ruthless Aggression era, but that's kind of how I started was Grandma Jack would watch it. And then my mom, this was whenever Bone Crunchers were coming out, my mom would just start getting toys for me because okay. I was a big toy person. I was always in my room playing with figures, so she just started getting me action figures of wrestlers all the time. If it wasn't Batman, it was Stone Cold Steve Austin.
And your collection, and we've talked about this, but I mean, that was probably a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago at this point. Your collection is massive, and you guys were talking just the other night at Strideversary about some of the Chase figures and what's out there. And I think it's really cool that your girlfriend supports this habit. And also I think it just gets into it just as much as you do, as far as the collecting goes. Is that right?
She actually was collecting before she met me.
Oh, wow. Okay,
so
cool.
We've just kind of merged our collections. That's why if you ever see me at a show, I'm always selling action figures. It's mainly doubles that we just kind of both had I had, and then she had.
Gotcha.
And we're like, we can buy more action figures if we sell these doubles that we don't need.
Good point.
Which was a good business move on our part. But also, the reason that people are talking about figures so much at the Stride shows are mainly my fault. Because I got, Dan into it really bad.
Yeah.
Brett Daniels is only collecting figures because of me and Zoe Moore.
Yeah.
So, which is hilarious to me. I apologize to him anytime I, get him a figure.
So
I did this to you.
Are you a let them breathe? You're a let them breathe kind of guy, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They get open before they get to the house if I'm not the one driving the car.
So now, obviously, AEW is releasing a line of figures as well. Are you looking for, I would imagine as a collector and a wrestling fan, and I think you're a pretty solid AEW fan too, you're obviously looking forward to this line?
I might have them pre-ordered already, all of them.
Wow.
Jeremy Padour, the guy that did the classic superstars of uh-huh. The mid-2000s, I wasn't collecting toys at that point. If I would have, I would need to everything. But he was the one that did the classic superstars, which was a really beloved line. He's actually the guy that owns the company that's doing AEW toys.
Oh, okay.
So, I am super stoked. The first two waves look amazing. I'm going to have to buy a new shelf for them, but, I'm so excited. I have the ring and the first wave of figures already pre-ordered.
That's awesome.
So, I'm pretty excited for them. You don't really get a whole lot of chances to, be on the ground level of a collection.
Yeah.
So, I'm just going to buy one of every regular figure and then any of the ringside ones. So I'll probably end up getting a little bit of bubbly. I just don't have that one ordered up yet.
Nice. And I don't remember if I told this story, but I remember back in 96 when the first wave of Jack's figures came out. And I was actually living in St. Louis at the time, but I was back in Cape Girardeau, which is home for Cape Championship Wrestling for those listening outside of Southern Illinois or Southeast Missouri. But I was visiting some friends because I went to the university there. And I ran into Toys R Us, and they had all six of the the first wave of Jax figures, and I bought all six of them.
And that's awesome.
It wasn't until just very recently that I, you know, when I started doing some of the YouTube stuff, that I actually finally took them out of their packages, because it's like, you know, what am I going to do with these? I'm not going to resell them. I might as well let them breathe and, you know, display them and have some fun with it. So, yeah, it was you getting in on the ground floor of the AEW figures is very reminiscent of that first. And, you know, and obviously I'm really old and remember the first line of LJNs and, you know, getting those and finding them on that chase and whatnot. It was always exciting and fun. Do you get the thrill of the chase and finding the figures in the stores that you can't order online, or do you typically order online?
I'm willing to say I do 90% of my toy buying in person. Like, okay, there's 10% of it that I'll, like, if I just know it's going to be hard to find, or if it's cheap enough on Amazon or Ringside, I'll just buy them.
Mm-hmm.
There's some, of course, that you can't get avoid. Like, anytime Ringside does like a exclusive, like, you have to buy it from them.
Yeah.
Those end up being birthday gifts from Sadie. She'll just end up buying them because she knows I'm, like, too lazy to put my order stuff in. So she's just like, all right, cool. Hardy Boys, those are yours now. And I was like, oh, cool, Christmas gift. But yeah, no, I do. I figure hunt. I'm not going to say every day because that sounds super unhealthy. As a couple, we do it every day. Like, one of us will go to stores.
Yeah.
But it's like an every other day because there's always like two or three things we're actively looking for. Gotcha. So we're like, oh yeah, well, like, it's your turn to go to Target today. So it makes a really great relationship, actually.
What was a figure that you had been looking for, chasing, and you found, and you were just over the top? You're like, oh my God, this is it! I finally found it. Has there been anything like that yet?
Oh, all the time. Cassius Ohno was the biggest one. He was a Target exclusive.
Yeah,
and they had the wave. So the way it works is like every Elite wave now has a store exclusive because Mattel hates us. And Cassius Ohno, who I'm a big Chris Hero fan, like, yeah. I went, true story, you can ask Asa when you see him, I was at WrestleMania Access in 2018, and I was in Trish Stratus's line to do the meet and greet for her.
Uh-huh.
And then Asa calls me and he's like, hey, there's like 10 people in line right now, Cassius Ohno is doing a signing. I was like, all right, I'm leaving now. So I went out of Hall of Famer Trish Stratus's line to go meet Chris Hero, which I'm sure I could have done about 80 times in my life just because he ran so many times in this area.
Yeah.
But I've never, like, I just never went to indie shows before. But yeah, I love him. He was the Target. They had the regular wave out. So me and Sadie went to the, like, this was in Marion. We went to the electronics desk and said, hey, do you have any more of these in the back? And they pulled, well, she said, like, we need Paige, hot goth chick is the way she described her. And he said, let me just go grab all of them. And he had Ohno and Paige.
Oh,
and
nice.
Ohno at the time was going for like $180 on eBay. So I was very happy to find that one.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Chad and I actually, when we were at WrestleMania 26 in Phoenix, we were dressed as Money Inc. And we see this guy walking towards us and he's like, oh my God, Money Inc. It was Chris Hero. And he was with, which we took a picture with him because he was very stoked. He was with a guy we know today as Seth Rollins.
And, oh, really?
That yeah, was. And just kind of didn't really pay much attention. And we knew, you know, he was Tyler Black at the time. But, yeah, so that's kind of our cool Chris here. And honestly, until I met Chad and really started, I didn't know much about the indie scene anyway. So I didn't really know a whole lot about Chris Hero. So I that's kind of my funny, you know, meeting Chris Hero story and
yeah.
Whatnot.
Well, it was one of those, it broke my heart when I talked to him at Mania because I said, like, he asked me where I was from. He was a super nice guy. And I was like, oh, I'm from Cape Girardeau, Missouri, which I mean is practically true. I've lived here for 10 years. And he was like, oh, I used to wrestle there all the time whenever it was, and it was like Missouri Wrestling Revival, what it used to be.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, I could have seen you, and I was a big fan of you, but I was either, A, didn't have a car, or B, had any friends in high school that would have drove down to the arena building.
Right, right.
But it was just cool that he even said, like, yeah, that one building with the weird stage off to the side, and I was like, I wasn't wrestling yet. I had just started training, but it's one of those, like, a couple years later, or a couple months later, I end up wrestling in the same building that he did.
That's cool.
And I was like, that's really cool.
Yeah. Well, in that, you know, so when you are, you know, because Cape Girardeau, for folks who don't know where that is, it's about 2 hours south of St. Louis. So
you know, I grew up in St. Louis, so we would go WWF or back then the NWA would come through St. Louis all the time. And so I went, I was fortunate enough. We went a lot. We didn't go every time, but we went enough that I have a lot of fond memories of it. And then fast forward, when I moved to Cape Girardeau to go to college, WWF came to town a handful of times at the Show Me Center, which was right next to, or is right next to, the dorms. So, you know, yeah. We would literally walk over there on a Sunday afternoon. I remember the very first one I went to was in 91, before you were born. Thank you. And it was Rowdy Roddy Piper and Ric Flair in the main event. And earlier in that day, Flair had wrestled, they were doing a double shot in St. Louis and then came down to Cape, but Flair had wrestled Hogan in St. Louis, but obviously Cape, a much smaller town. So, you know, Piper ended up being in the main event that night. But when did you start going to live events? Did you go to the Show Me Center? Were you going to indie shows as a teenager, as a young fan, or were you just kind of sticking to the WWF stuff?
I think I went to one ICOT show with my buddy Andy, like back in 2012, 2013, in that ballpark.
And that's in Anna, Illinois, right?
Yeah, that was in Illinois. He said, "Hey, there's this show, let's go." And I was like, "All right, cool." Actually ended up seeing Billy Hills there for the first time.
Okay, yeah. I knew Farmer was a part of that.
Yeah, but I think the first, like, actual company I went to was Impact Wrestling ran out of Cape one time.
Okay, I do remember that.
And this was the show that got...
Didn't something happen?
The Missouri Athletic Commission. Yeah. Half the wrestlers didn't have their licenses nor, like, correct blood work, which is funny to me now that, like, all these independent wrestlers have to make sure their blood work and everything's current.
So talk to me about that, because you do wrestle in Missouri. You obviously are, you know, born and raised over there. It's much different in Illinois. There is no licensing. There's very little, if any, regulation. What does it take to become a wrestler in Missouri, the state of Missouri? Because you have to have blood work and all kinds of stuff. Is that right?
Yeah. So basically, it's way more simple than it sounds. It's just a big pain to get it all done. But what you need is you have to have a valid blood work, which is like tests for, I want to say Hep B and C, mm-hmm. and then AIDS, which, like, I passed it good. And then you have to pass a sports physical. So the blood work is, it used to be every 6 months. That was what was annoying, is you would go do this blood work for like 80 to however much money it would cost. It was usually 80 for me. And then you would have to go get a physical. It ended up costing like $110 just to get your license. And then your license on top of that costs like 40, 50 bucks.
So are you going to your doctor, or are you going to somebody designated by the Missouri Athletic Commission?
I have, this sounds super shady. There's a guy that most of us deal with, up in Kansas City, I think. I think that's where I'm sending money to, maybe. But he has some kind of thing where he just goes to like a lab. He's like, "Yeah, go to this lab at this time. They'll take care of you." So we pay him a flat rate, and then he sets up our appointment, and then they just send the results to him. And then he's knows people at the commission, or he's part of the commission or something. I don't know.
You haven't been
Steve's
in trouble.
Steve's a great guy.
Yeah. So, and there are actually people from the commission, because I've been to a couple of shows at CCW. One of them, it was Super Show a couple years ago. It was the one that Ace Hawkins and Jackson Crawley were wrestling, and the action kind of spilled outside, and the guardrail kind of got knocked over. And there was a lot of uneasiness, I think, from some of the owners and management of CCW at that time. And it was explained to me later that the commissioner was sitting, or a member of the commission was sitting in the front row. So do they come and monitor each of your shows as well?
They sit. Anytime I wrestle in Missouri, the commission sits in about the same spot, no matter where the venue is. Okay. It's always to the back.
Okay.
And they watch the whole show.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, we can't, which I'm very, like, it's one of those things, it makes the thing in Missouri that's awesome is it's very exclusive to have a promotion here, because it is such a pain to get a promotion. Yeah. So if you can, and if you get a normal booking in Missouri, it's pretty great, because it's just like, all right, cool, you know only talent's going to work here, because it costs too much to get the license in Missouri.
Right.
So you don't get a lot of randoms, like, it's a pretty good group to be in. But, like, we can't blade, no intentional bleeding at all, which is awesome.
Yeah.
you can only be outside of the ring so much. There's certain rules with weapons you can use. You have to, like, if you're going to do anything like outside of the box, that's a little different. You have to get it approved with the commissioner beforehand.
Really?
Because, like, I've gotten the, I think the two diciest moments at CCW, well, three, was two, there's been two times where the guardrail has broken because of a dive.
Mm-hmm.
Those were pretty bad. I know Mathis took a thumbtack spot.
Ooh.
And that was kind of iffy.
That was the Abyss match, I'm guessing, huh?
That was Abyss. And then I took a picture frame to the back of the head.
Ooh.
So we had to get all of that cleared.
Really?
And, like, whenever we cleared the picture frame thing, because I was said, yeah, whatever, if the commissioner, because I'm in the back of my head, this was the biggest Dalton thing that I could have thought of, was the commission will not clear this spot.
Right, right.
Because it's going to lead to some kind of blood, which I was right. But, like I said, I told my opponent, I was like, go clear it with the commission. If they're cool with it, I'll do it. Thinking that they wouldn't clear it. And then my opponent comes back, yeah, they said it's fine. I just, and then he said, he's like, the commissioner said I have to hit you with the cardboard part, not the glass part. And I was like, well, I didn't think of that being a possibility.
So, but how soon do they get that? Like, so are you, you're having to kind of submit all these ideas to the commission before the show starts?
It's never that, like, it's mainly spots like that. If it's going to be something goofy like that, we need to let them know. So that way, because, like, if a commissioner deems it too much, or if they think somebody bladed on purpose, like, they can shut a show down.
Gotcha.
So, like, things like that you want to get cleared so that way they know. You don't want to surprise the commissioner with something like that.
And now, like, because I've never done anything in Missouri at all in terms of, yeah, I've always just been as a fan. Like, even when I know Shannon was the ring announcer for a while, but then he eventually kind of turned into that managerial role and now is and does some wrestling as well. Did he have to get his license to even just do the managing stuff because he was taking some bumps?
Well, you can't take a bump unless you have a wrestler's license.
Okay.
So Shannon's had a wrestler's license for almost probably been a year now.
Okay.
But before that, he did have a manager's license. You have to have a second license, I think is what it's
really
called.
Okay. I thought that was something Gorilla Monsoon made up.
Yeah, there used to be licenses for everything in Missouri. Like, I'm talking ring, bellkeeper, ring announcer, manager, referee.
Wow.
Right now, I think it's just seconds, which is managers, referees, and wrestler. I think those are the only three licenses in Missouri offered right now. I could be wrong.
Wow.
But I think that's what it is.
So explain to me, when did you know you wanted to get involved as a wrestler? Because you guys at CCW started off, you know, we mentioned Asa and Ali Hebert and Shannon Young. The four of you all host Pro Wrestling Unscripted. And then you kind of transition in your fans at first, but then you all kind of get different, you know, Shannon was the ring announcer and Ali was doing camera work and some interviewing stuff and you're doing interviews and Ace is doing interviews. So you guys all kind of work your way in and become part of the team. And I know how indie wrestling works where, you know, a lot of times it's, hey, can I help? And then they give you something to do. And, you know, obviously some cases you're going to, and I, you know, I'm not asking you if you're being compensated, but you obviously then all became a part of this team. And then it goes to you getting into the ring and training to wrestle. So first tell me how you guys parlayed into the announcing and the interviews and the camera work and whatnot.
That happened pretty much because we were doing PWU.
Okay.
They started up, Shannon and Ali went to the very first show. That was the tournament that gave the first CCW champion. The second show, Ricochet was the guest.
Yes, I was at that show.
Yeah, so the way that I wanted to, the reason I found out that Ricochet was going to be there was Jason Wells, the owner and one of the owners in the Booker at the time, came into my store as a manager of a video store.
Okay.
And he was wearing a Colt Cabana shirt. And I was like, dude, I love your shirt. And he said, hey, there's going to be a show in 2 weeks with Ricochet here. And I said, I'm going to be there for that. So I made sure I had off work that day. And so we went to the show. It was awesome. That's how I fell in love with Barb Wire, Austin Lane, Sarge, Billy, all of them. I fell in love with CCW that night. And we decided it's local wrestling. We're going to go report on it because we want to support local wrestling. So we did a podcast about it, and it caught wind. I guess it caught Jason or Big Lee or Ken found out about it. And so they wanted to be on the show to promote the next couple of shows. And then from there, it pretty much turned into they got the Fight TV thing initially, and they said they needed a commentary team. And they said, well, you guys are the obvious pick. And that's kind of how it morphed into doing backstage interviews, because they wanted somebody that they could trust that the wrestlers already know. And all the wrestlers pretty much knew us, because we were in front row of every show. And then we would text them asking them for information so we could report on them correctly for PWU. Kind of like whenever Stride happened, me and Asa went there, the first couple that we went to, we like messaged the Facebook page because I didn't know any of you guys.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I messaged the Facebook page and I was like, hey, we're a local podcast out of Missouri. We want to cover you guys. Is it okay? It's kind of what happened with CCW.
So then how does, at what point, when did you know you wanted to train and actually wrestle? Was it before all of that, or was it once you kind of got a foot in the door, you thought, I could do this?
So this is not the best story when it comes to something like this, but it's a pretty good one. If anybody knows me, the one thing that people can't do is tell me I can't do something.
Uh-huh.
Or they just, if they like, there's no way you can do that. Well, they started the CCW training grounds.
Right.
And Big Lee was one of the owners at the time. He was in charge of getting the people for the training ground, and he was doing it at the store I was working at. He was doing the interviews there, and he made a comment about me not – he didn't think I could handle it. He's like, you would get hurt. That's why you're not interviewing for it. And I was like, okay, cool. So sign me up. And he was like, all right, cool, I'll sign you up for it, but there's no way you'll last. So that's – I pretty much got Marty McFly into training, where he just basically called me chicken, and I was like, all right, cool, I'm calling your bluff.
That's awesome.
And from there, it just kind of became a – I knocked myself silly on my first bump, which I got right back up from because Roger Mathis was right over my shoulder. And I didn't want to look like a chicken shit to him, so I was like – I just popped right back up. I knew I hit my head, though. But I, like – It hurt really bad, but I really liked it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I liked – it wasn't – the first bump wasn't, oh, my God, I'm never doing this again. It was just like, I want to see if I can do this better. And then it just kind of evolved from there, and that's how it's – my training went, was just like, all right, well, I can't do this. I want to try to do it better. And then I would just do it until it wasn't a big deal. Couple months into that, I decided that I wasn't getting enough training at CAPE. And I was already friends with Dexter and Red just mm-hmm. from doing the podcast and stuff like that. I got a hold of Red and I said, hey, can I come start training at Stride full time? Because I need more in ring time if I'm actually going to be able to do this properly. Because CCW only offers it once a month, whereas Stride is twice a week for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to get more ring time, and that's actually, it was just kind of a drive to want to do it, but there was never a certain part where I'm like, I'm gonna be a wrestler. It was mainly like, screw you, Big Lee, I can do this.
Well, and what impressed me was the fact that you stayed so dedicated to it that you were willing to drive to Southern Illinois, and I think when you started training we were still at the mall, so you were driving to Marion, which probably for you was well over an hour, I'm guessing, or pretty close to it.
It's like an hour 10.
Yeah, and you're doing that twice a week. And you know, obviously you have a day job and a relationship that we talked about earlier. So, you know, to me that showed that you were serious about it. And, you know, it may have started off as a, hey, Big Lee, I can do this. But you really, over the last, and I don't even remember when you exactly started training, but you have evolved a lot, and you know, and I meant to tell you this before the show, but I guess this is a perfect place to say it. The tag team match that you were involved in the other night, you know, your confidence level has increased so much, and I think that's a lot with just about anything we do in life. You have to have that level of confidence, and yours was you know, you're showing it, and you are getting in there, and you are taking more risks, and you are connecting, you know, you're not a quote unquote flash in the pan. You are actually in there, and I admire what you are doing and the fact that you have, you know, pushed so hard to do it and followed it and took it upon yourself, because some guys would say, eh, what I'm doing over here is sufficient enough. But as Tyler has always said, you know, you're not going to get any better just coming to practice. You know, Michael Jordan didn't become the greatest just showing up on game day. So, you know, the fact that you've stuck with it and you continue to stick with it, I tip my hat to you.
Thank you. And it's one of those, like, I am probably one of the most, I've had some of the most fortunate matches in the world over the course of 2 years.
Yeah.
Because, like, and I mean, I'm a product of being at the right place at the right time all the time. I've got to wrestle with some really good, like, people. Right. Billy Hills, I've either wrestled with him or tagged with him at least 20 times. People like, I've wrestled Heath and Cape for a program. That was one of some of the most fun I've had was wrestling him, just because he was the person that taught me for an extended amount of time. Entire opening, like, 6 months I did at CCW was amazing, because I got to be in the ring with Glacier and Marco Stunt and Joey Ryan. And it's one of those things where you get in there with people that have been around the world doing it, you get a new appreciation for how it's done.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Was it hard? Was it challenging wrestling against Tyler or Heath, as fans know him, when, like you said, he did a lot of your training? So were you nervous about that? Were you afraid? You know, talk to me a little bit about, you know, student versus teacher, so to speak, when you get in that situation.
The best thing about wrestling with Tyler is that he always wants to make you look good.
Mm-hmm.
So we very much played off of that. We did a 3-month story where we tagged for a show. He turned his back on me. We had a match, and then we had the blow off match.
Mm-hmm.
And we very much still had to play with the story of me not fully being a wrestler yet, because that was straight off of the Shannon Young story.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. From Super Show. So it was Super Show, Heath Hatton, and Dalton Anthony.
Okay. That's right.
And yeah, so like I wasn't an established wrestler yet. At CCW, I was still very much in that thing where they're getting me to where I could be one. So we had to get the right opponent for me, and Tyler was the perfect opponent. Tyler tells an amazing story anytime he's in a ring, and his number one concern every time is making the other person look good. He'll tell us in the back that he's getting his shit in.
Right.
He'll do it, but like, he will always make sure that the other person looks good.
Yeah.
It was probably the best story that I think. Well, there's two really amazing stories, but my favorite one with Tyler was I was right in the middle of the comeback in the second match. So, like, I'm getting up on him. And I was ending it with a second rope drop kick, which is a move I've done 100 times in practices.
Yeah.
I do a shotgun drop kick, like, 30 times in matches before. Like, it's just an easy back bump. And I go to jump, and the crowd's fired up for it, and my foot slips off the second rope, and I just face plant.
Oh, no.
And I mean, it was a CCW crowd. It was, and I, like, my thought was, oh shit, I got to get back up. But it's right in the middle of my comeback, and Tyler's just standing there. Now I hit the ground, I got back up, he put me in a DDT, and then he just started calling the rest of the match.
Yeah.
Which was good, because I was pretty messed up, because I landed on my head.
Ooh.
And he took care of me the rest of the match. And it was one of those where it was just, it's a funny story we tell now, because we start talking about, like, what we should have done was this. We did it recently. Where we were talking about, it's like, I would have been a lot better in that match whenever I messed myself up if we had done this instead of this. But he was amazing to work with. I hope to get to do it again soon, because I learned a whole lot from that small series of matches.
Yeah. Well, in this part, I may have to edit it out, but I'm going to bring it up because it's my favorite Dalton Anthony story so far. And that was, we were doing an angle in Stride where there was this mysterious man dressed in black, head to toe, black hood, you know, couldn't see his face. And you were the guy under that mask, and you were kind of double dipping and working as Dalton Anthony or Mr. Anthony and as the masked assassin, as it were.
Yeah.
Before I get to the story part of it, were there challenges involved with wrestling not only twice in one night, but also, you know, you were like head to toe covered. So what are the challenges involved with that? Especially when you're still kind of new and getting acclimated to how all this works?
The tricky part with wearing all the black was just it was so hot in the Stride building in general. If we were at a school and I had to do that, which I only had to do like once or twice, but if we were in the Stride building, that building gets so warm. And we started this angle in like July or August.
Yeah.
That building got so hot so quick, and I'm just covered in head to toe and all of the stuff. And fortunately for me, Tyler always made it to where the Masked Assassin would go before Dalton Anthony.
Yeah.
So like I would be covered for like an hour, like 10 minutes before all the fans would get there. I get all the stuff on in case I needed to go do something. So I would be covered. I would just be sweating. I would wear my singlet. So I had my singlet on. I would have black Levi's, black boots, and like three shirts on. Mm. And then I would have gloves and that mask.
Yeah.
And I have longer hair up top. So like I would just start sweating like crazy. That's why in that time frame, if you would have noticed, Dalton Anthony was already sweating before I even got out to the for my match. I was already drenched by the point of getting there, but it was just, and the mask was super restrictive. Like it took off my peripheral. There was no mouth to it. So I was just like, I got winded so quick. I did a spot with Tony Flood one time that was just a quick little like boom, boom, boom spot that was supposed to be fun with some slaps. And it was so like, I was so like gasping for air, just getting that opening spot out.
Did anybody ever realize it was you?
I honestly don't think so.
Yeah, I was going to say, that was a pretty good kept secret.
Yeah, there was like one CCW fan that noticed the way I did something was the same.
Mm.
I think, I took a punch, and I do the same self for a punch, no matter what.
Oh, gotcha.
And he noticed that I did it as the mask guy. He was like, oh, that was him.
Makes sense.
So, yeah, so I was like, I tried to do a good enough job. Like, I never did any of the same move. I think I even switched up my striking a little bit to, like, kind of offset that. But, like, of course, you learn how to do something the same way 100 times. You're going to do it no matter what. Like, it's just going to be muscle memory.
Right, right.
But, well, yeah, the only tricky part of it was just, like, wrestling is that getting undressed, making sure, get redresses, Mr. Anthony, and then making sure I have my next match in my head.
Right, because, you know, and this is where it kind of comes into the funny part is, it was the September fundraiser up in Centralia. Tyler and I were the tag team champions, which still is should not be a real sentence, but it is. And we were defending in a triple threat match against Roger and Chris Hargis and the Masked Assassin and Bud Gallows. And we had gone over the finish. You, though, because you were involved, I believe you were in a legacy match, right? A fatal four-way or something?
No limits. That was the night that Cash lost all the belts. Okay. So it was me, Dexter Roswell, Cash Borden, and Bo Sawyer for the No Limits title.
Okay. So yeah, you're kind of, and those are three cats that you don't want to mess with and not miss out on what is going to be happening in your match. So obviously a higher profile match for you. Our match was all, you know, the ending was Tyler and I were both going to hit our finishers. Again, this should not be a real sentence. Tyler spears Bud and I chokeslam you. And then Tyler had told me and Bud, he's like, you know, Kevin's going to pin Dalton and I'll pin Bud and you know, we'll do a double pin. Well, nobody had smartened you up to that. So I chokeslam you and you go to roll out of the ring and I pull you back in and cover you. And as they're counting three, you go, "You dick."
Yeah, I think I said every swear I could in the matter of a 3 count.
Oh, but, my gosh. Yeah, and it because, was so. And yeah, then I'm so, like, you know what? We really didn't smarten him up to this. But it was funny because it was you, and I knew that you would be, you know, you would not be like, oh, my God, I can't believe the announcer just pinned me. But
yeah,
it was pretty damn funny. Thing.
Whenever Tyler told me the finish, he was like, all right, this is going to happen. You're going to axe handle Gallows. I'm going to spear him. Kevin's going to chokeslam you. I'm going to pin Gallows. But to this day, nobody told me that you were pinning me. So I was like, all right, cool. I'll eat the chokeslam. I'll roll out of the ring. So I eat the chokeslam. I start rolling out of the ring out of respect to your finisher. And you just grab me and hold me down. And I was like, this mother is trying to get a pin on me. Well, I'm not kicking out because I'm not about to face the wrath of whatever happened. But it was just, it was only funny because it was me and you.
Right, right.
Where it was like, all right, cool. This will be entertaining down the road.
Yeah.
To tell the story. But yeah, it was just funny because it was just like, what are, because I was just like, what the hell are you doing? Like, the finish just happened, and you're, like, holding on to me. And then once I realized you pinned me, I was like, you dick!
Well, you now are, you know, you were, as Mr. Anthony, and obviously as the Masked Assassin, you were a bad guy. You are now Dalton Anthony, one half of the Wrestling Buddies, a tag team champion here in Stride. And I know you do some tag team work, and you're part of House 100 over in Cape. Was it ever difficult, you know, because we've talked about this before with Farmer, where Farmer was a bad guy in Cape, but a good guy over here in Illinois. Has it ever become a challenge to play the two different roles? Because I think your characters are basically the same. It's all kind of based on you as a person, but does it become, you know, your actions and what you do over in Cape differ from what you are doing over here?
I don't do any of the more indie spots that I do. I'm not in the ring anymore, Kate. That's pretty much what it boils down to.
Okay.
But it's only funny because I stayed face at Kate for like a year and a half, and then there was like maybe a 5 to 6 month period where I was face at both companies. So it was, my life was super simple. It was the same thing every show. And then CCW approached me and said, we're going to turn you heel and put you with Shannon, which is a cool opportunity because I started against Shannon.
Right.
Like, House 100 happened because of Shannon making the group, and Shannon made the group against me. So it was really cool. Like, it was a cool opportunity to do that. Whenever I started, though, as Dalton Anthony, and that was Mr. Anthony in Stride, it was two different people, in my opinion, where I was playing second fit. Like, I was playing behind Dexter, which is an awesome place to play behind because he is so good at, like, getting the crowd ticked off.
Right.
That, like, I walked into those nights tagging with him that with nothing to worry about because I knew Garrett would get all the heat for us.
Yeah.
So I would just have to choke somebody or, like, hold somebody on the rope. Like, I wouldn't have to do a whole lot with him. Whereas now it's kind of the same thing at CCW where I have Shannon, who is amazing at getting heat.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's kind of one of those things where I've done it a little bit. Now I want to get better at it. It goes back to the training. Like, I've done it once. I think I can do it. Let me do it again. Now I'm trying to get my own heat, and I'm trying to do, like, weird heel, like, not weird heel things, just basic heel things to get people mad at me. My first show really working heel, I threw my bandana into the crowd, and somebody threw it back at me, but I felt it hit my head, so I caught it as it went down, and I turned around and said they weren't even smart enough to do that right. Like,
wow.
I'm trying to become a better heel without really needing that mouthpiece.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, no, the half of the Wrestling Buddies basically early CCW Dalton Anthony with more confidence and a little bit more maneuvers to pull off.
Yeah. Well,
it's basically the same guy.
Yeah. Well, like I said earlier, you know, you have evolved, and obviously there are guys that get in this and women who get in this and for whatever reason, it doesn't click. They don't get it, you know, and they either fade away or they just stay status quo and stagnate. But you have you know, overcome those early hurdles. Where do you see, you know, is this something that you want to pursue on a bigger stage, on a bigger level? You know, do you aspire for AEW, WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, or are you kind of like, you know, I'm happy doing the local indie scene?
Well, it mainly boils down to, like, my life as a human versus mm-hmm. my life as a wrestler.
Yeah.
Like, I am a teacher by trade. That's what I do my Monday through Fridays. So unless a big company called and said, hey, we're giving you a contract tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
there's not, I really wouldn't feel comfortable leaving Missouri for 2 weeks to do a tryout.
Right.
I have too many responsibilities to be able to do that. If somebody called me and they were going to offer me a contract and it would change in my 2 guests' life, I'd love that. But right now in my life, I'm pretty happy being the independent wrestler on the weekends. I've gotten some awesome opportunities. I've worked with some amazing people. I've got to wrestle in a couple different states. I want to get better at it. I have a couple of dream matches I want to happen just within this area, not even pulling somebody big in to wrestle me, but like there's still a lot of people in this area that I want to wrestle as I've gotten better, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It does. Because yeah, I think that everybody, you know, you kind of aspire to reach a level, and then, you know, once you get to that level, you know, even if you redo some of the guys that you wrestled before, you know, having that opportunity now as you become older and wiser in the business, it that makes perfect sense to me. Dalton, yeah. As we kind of wrap things up here, you know, I didn't know if you could talk about being a teacher, but you brought it up. Do your students know? Do your colleagues know that you do this? You know, because as I talked with Chad Smart on one of his podcasts not too very long ago about guilty pleasures, I remember when I had my first match, my boss, when I was still in the TV business, told me, never do that again. And I ended up doing it again. But do you run into anything with that, or is it kind of a we don't talk about that kind of thing?
I don't tell my students. I teach younger students. I don't tell them, mainly because I don't want to cause violence of any kind at my workplace. Sure. Just because, like, older students, I don't think I have an issue with them. They're smart to be like, oh, it's the F word, fake.
Yeah.
But, like, little kids that still believe in it, I also don't want to tell them that I do that and then them see me perfectly fine 2 days later at work.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Like, I want to keep the wrestling as real to them going for as long as they can, because that keeps the magic in it, in my opinion, for children. My coworkers think it's awesome.
That's cool.
I've had fairly recently, actually, when I turned heel in Kate, I had a group of like 6 or 7 school teachers show up to the show that night, because they met a bunch of them never went even like really watched wrestling, but they were like, we're going to support Dalton in this. And they said it was like one of the most wild nights. Sexy Sarge O'Reilly came back to that show.
Yeah.
And they saw that, and then I had to explain that to them, which was the greatest moment of my life. Because, like, elementary school teacher, you usually think not, like, if you've ever seen me in a wrestling ring, if you didn't know I was a teacher, you would be shocked to find out that's what I do, is I'm an elementary teacher.
Right, right.
Because the normal, like, archetype of that looks way different. Well, they were all at the show watching. and it was, they had a blast. My coworkers think it's awesome. I actually went out to EPAD work yesterday, and I had the stride belt in my car.
Oh, nice.
And I was like, hey, guys, look what I got. And they thought it was the neatest thing. But, yeah, my coworkers, they think it's awesome. The only time that it got weird was you were there at the stride show where I blew my lip out.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because I went to work with 9 stitches in my mouth that following day, or 2 days later, and they were like, what happened? And then I had to tell that whole story. But, it's really cool. They all are super supportive. My principals know I do it. And they are just like, they think it's awesome. Like, I haven't gotten any don't do that again.
That's good.
But it makes it to where I do kind of pick and choose what I do as a good guy or a heel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I try not to use any kind of swears.
Yeah.
I try not to get super vulgar. I'll like be a dick to somebody, but I'm not going to be like vulgar.
Right.
Because I just don't want, at a certain point, Dalton Anthony and my actual name person will, somebody's going to see Dalton Anthony and put it to the teacher.
Right.
And I don't want that to ever happen. So I try to watch my P's and Q's a little bit.
Yeah. Makes sense. Well, Dalton, I appreciate you being a part of the show. If folks want to follow you on Twitter, what's your Twitter handle or whatever social media you use that you don't mind people following you?
My Facebook's public, Dalton Anthony. I'm holding the belt with Jay. Let me see. My Twitter is PZ85DAnthony. I don't even think I can tell you what my Instagram is. I think it's like Dalton Anthony 92 or something like that.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Those are all
I tag you in the stride pictures.
Oh, yeah. So if you go to any of those, you will see the most boring professional wrestler of your life. I post the wrestling posters I'm on, cat photos of my 2 cats, Kazoo and Maisie, and action figures. So if you want to see wrestling, action figures, and cats, follow me on any of those platforms. I'll make sure that those needs get filled.
Very cool. Well, Dalton, thank you for being the interview this month. And fans, thanks for tuning in. And we'll be back next week with another episode of My 1-2-3 Cents.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.